is Spiezer versus Mondo or Mondau. I may have mispronounced both names, and counsel can correct me.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rafael Urquia. I represent the appellate in this matter, Arendt Spezer. My co-counsel is Angela Wong. We are here today.
Do you want to reserve any time?
I do. That the appellant would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. We are here today to address one issue. Whether or not Ms. Mondo breached her duty to Mr. Spezer, our client. The trial court's ruling was erroneous in three ways. First, Mondo's dangerous driving breached her statutory duty to Spezer under RCW 4661185. Two, Mondo's dangerous driving also breached her duty of reasonable care to Spezer. Three, at the very least, there are issues of material fact which should be decided by a jury.
With respect to the second thing that you just mentioned, is that tied to a statutory duty or some more general duty?
As far as number
that you claim was breached, I understand the 185, but you also talked about something else that didn't appear, at least from what you said, to be tied to a statute.
Your Honor, it is not tied to a statute. It's a common law duty, which we believe was found in the Harris v. Burnett case.
Okay. Well, let me just ask you about that case. Below, I believe, the argument in response to the motion for summary judgment was twofold. One, that there was a genuine issue of material fact with respect to 185.
That's correct.
And secondly, as I read the record, that there was a genuine issue of material fact with respect to 190 sub 2.
That's correct. And for the purposes of this appeal, we are waiving the second statute in this case.
Okay. Well, let's turn to Harris versus Burnett. And I think everybody understands what the facts are here. There's a accident involving a motorcycle and a vehicle that was turning. The motorcyclist, your client, was the favored driver. The vehicle was the disfavored driver, and this happened over on 15th West. In Harris, there's language that says the clear stretch of the road doctrine, which I think is what you're talking about on appeal, is based on the requirement that a disfavored driver, in this case Mondo, proceed to make a left turn in front of oncoming traffic only when she has observed all that is to be seen from a prudent point of observation. And then it goes on to say if that is in fact done, then the disfavored driver has discharged her duty of due care by doing everything that is reasonable to do under the circumstances. So that's one situation. And then it goes on to say that, however, if the obstruction that blocks the view of the disfavored driver is one that reasonably can be expected to move, such as another occupied vehicle or road repair machinery, then the disfavored driver must permit the impairment to his view to move on so he can see the stretch of the road from which a favored driver might be approaching. So it seems to me there are two circumstances, one in which there is no obstruction involved, and the second is where an obstruction is involved. Which is this case?
This is a case where we believe it's undisputed that Ms. Mondo stated she didn't see Spezer. We believe that Spezer was there to be viewed. We believe that because in this case, there are two lanes of traffic on oncoming that were stopped for a green light. It was rush hour in Seattle around 8 a.m. Mondo then testified that she looked left and didn't see anything. We believe that it's her duty as the left-hand turning driver to have, A, either have seen Spesser, or B, as I believe that's stated in Harris, when it's expected that these lanes of traffic may move, and in this case they certainly were expected to move, they had a green light, that the driver either needs to make sure that it's clear or the driver needs to wait until those two lanes follow through the intersection, and then she can see the third lane of travel.
Another way of saying that, if you agree, is that, in other words, the disfavored driver would have to reposition herself so as to get a clear a view of the clear stretch of the road. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely.
Okay. In this case, what evidence supports the contention that there was this duty in this case to reposition herself?
In this case, and I think this comes to the position of Spesser, which goes to the fact that we believe Spesser did constitute an immediate hazard. And this, because in this case, there's three lanes of travel. Spesser is traveling in the far right lane. There's two lanes of traffic, which is, I believe, supported in the record, that are stopped. Therefore, the point of view of Ms. Mondo from her position just didn't allow her to properly see that third lane.
So you're taking the position that this is a situation under the second part of the text that I just read, that there was an obstruction that required her to reposition herself? Is that your argument?
Mondo testified that there was no obstruction. But that's, of course, her testimony that could be disputed, and it could be a material dispute of fact. It's more our position that as a left-hand turning driver, Mondo, under these circumstances, and in every case needs to, of course, be viewed under the circumstances, should have realized that I'm turning left, there's a third lane. She obviously didn't see Spesser or any other car or vehicle.
What's wrong with, rather than waiting till the traffic can clear under these circumstances, driving to a position where you can see the third lane and are still in one of the first two most easterly lanes?
So that's certainly a good question. I think
what's the answer?
I certainly think she needs to stay in her lane of travel. I think the case, the Doherty versus Metro Seattle case, is fairly on point to what Your Honor just said. In that case, the bus actually did that. It went into an oncoming lane of traffic, stopped.
But it was in the lane that the favored driver was traveling in. That's not the case here.
That's correct. That is not the case. But I think then,
So if Ms. Mondo travels to a point where she isn't interfering with your client's lane of travel, how has she violated her duty?
It's our position, Your Honor, that under RCW 4661.185, the driver of a vehicle intending, which I think is the key word, one of the key words in that statute, intending to turn left, needs to make sure that it's clear before she turns left, and I believe that's supported by the three or four cases that were in our brief. So in this case, she certainly, the third lane was not clear. This happened very quickly, as our client testified. He was going around the speed limit. He simply went straight through.
By failing to enter that third lane, how does she interfere with your client's right-of-way?
And I think the distinction there is that goes to proximate cause, not her breach of duty under RCW 4661.185.
When you get back up, why don't you tell me why that is a interference with a right-of-way if she's not present in the lane?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Jeff Dorr, and I represent Kelsey Mondo. In this matter, we're asking the Court to affirm the Superior Court's decision that Ms. Mondo did not breach her duty to yield as a left-turning driver because she was able to stop her vehicle before entering the lane in which the appellant was traveling.
Well, let's get back to my question.
Sure.
Harris versus Burnett has language in it that I've already read.
Yeah.
What's your position with respect to the question whether under this case and on this record there's any issue about a moving obstruction that would, in effect, impose an additional duty on your client?
Well, first, the right-hand turn, the right-hand lane that the appellant was traveling in is a right-turn-only lane, so there's a reasonable expectation that no car would be traveling straight through the intersection in that lane. So the two lanes of the easterly lanes.
Well,
it'd
still be in front of the vehicle turning left, though, even if it was just turning right, wouldn't it?
I believe there are two lanes of entry into that West Armory Way intersection. So theoretically, the left-hand turn lane would turn to the left. The right-hand turn lane would be in the right lane. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's the situation here. And the clear stretch of road doctrine, as you described it, starts with, was the person in a prudent point of observation, which she was in the proper left-turn lane when she began making her left turn, and that there was no oncoming traffic to be seen. And oncoming traffic in this situation was that two left-hand turn lanes, which, because traffic was stopped, and we've all been in this situation where they, even though theoretically they have a green light, they can't go all the way through the intersection, so they stop and allow someone to make the left-hand turn because that's as a courtesy. This is obviously the case here. She makes the left-hand turn, and because this person was in a right-hand turn lane, not in the lane going straight through, they couldn't have anticipated that he would be going through.
So your position is that your safe harbor is the first text that I quoted. In other words, she saw all that was there to be seen.
Correct.
She had correctly positioned herself, and then she went on to turn, stopped in the easterly lanes, didn't get to his lane, and so that's your safe harbor, right?
Correct.
Okay, now, on this record, is there any evidence to suggest that you even get to the second quotation that I spoke of? In other words, some obstruction of some sort that required your client to do more?
I don't think there's any requirement that our client do more. She saw what there was to be seen, she proceeded, and she still managed to stop before entering the plaintiff's, the appellant's lane of travel, which, as the trial court stated, meant she discharged her duty to yield as a matter of law. The cases that appellant has cited here, the Doherty case in particular, like the, Your Honors pointed out, those are cases where the disfavored driver was actually in a lane of travel in which the favored driver had a right to use. Here, that was not the case. The appellant was not in an oncoming lane in which my client stopped in front of. There was no interference, and so she discharged her duty as a matter of law. And, in fact, the court, in the record, actually stated, going back to your point about whether he's allowed to make that right-hand turn, or whether he's allowed to proceed through the intersection. The court actually stated that he's never allowed to go through that intersection. The appellant tried to raise the question of nave, where there was some convoluted language on the road signs, but in this case, the signage clearly stated right turn only, and the appellant has stated that his intention was to travel.
Is that your client's negligence or the comparative fault of the appellant?
It would go to comparative fault, which is exactly the point. Those questions of whether he was allowed to turn there or not are issues of proximate cause, and the court said those issues don't matter. This is an issue of breach of duty, and our client never breached the duty to yield. And I think it's clear that court can decide questions of breach as a matter of law. The Hurtado case lays this out, where only one reasonable conclusion can be reached, and in here, the facts and make it clear that there's only one reasonable conclusion, that our client never entered the lane in which the appellant was traveling, and therefore she discharged her duty to yield. To yield simply means to give up the right to use, give up possession of, and that's what she did. She stopped before she entered that lane. So she discharged her duty to the appellant.
What's the defendant's liability if a reasonable person seeing the defendant would conclude that she wasn't going to yield the right of way, took evasive action that resulted in harm, and then turned out to, even though it was a reasonable understanding of what was going to happen turned out to be wrong because of some extraordinary reaction by the defendant to avoid entering the lane.
Well, I think this goes to the Tobias case and the Mondor cases where they talked about train of circumstances and analyzing split-second timing. And here, the point of those cases was to say that the disfavored driver can't shift her duty to yield onto the plaintiff, onto the favored driver, by taking an action. Here, our client took on the burden of, she took the evasive action in this case, in which she yielded before she entered that lane. In all of those cases, they all involved situations where the disfavored driver either crossed the path. You know, in some of those cases, it was they were racing to beat the favored driver to the spot and didn't make it. In this case, our client didn't do that. She was able to stop before she crossed the path of the favored driver, and that's despite the favored driver being in an improper lane of travel, as his statements make clear. He was intending to go straight through an intersection in a right turn only lane, which is the only reason he needed to take evasive action, or felt he needed to, because it turns out he actually didn't need to, because our client never entered his lane of travel. That is all that's needed to find that she did not breach her duty as a matter of law. And like your honors pointed out, the claim of duty of reasonable care is based on some sort of nebulous thought, as opposed to a statutory definition of what a breach might be. And while we don't deny that there could be some duty of reasonable care, she discharged her duty by seeing what was to be seen and still managing to yield and stop the collision. And I think that's all we have to say here. The uncontroverted facts could lead to only one conclusion, as the trial court said. Ms. Mondale did not breach her duty to yield as a left-turning driver because she was able to stop her vehicle before entering the lane in which the appellant was traveling. Therefore, we would ask the court to affirm the trial court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
The respondent in this case just said racing. In this case, Ms. Mondo did what most people refer to as shooting the gap, and that's dangerous driving. This court asked me before I stepped down to explain why Ms. Mondo breached her duty even though she did not enter into our client's lane. We think this is there's a fairly simple answer to this question, not that anything's ever simple. But we do feel that RCW 4661185 makes clear that there doesn't need to be, one, a collision, or two, for the disfavored driver to enter into the favored driver's lane of travel.
Why is that?
That is because in the very first sentence, or the very first part of 4661185, it says the driver of a vehicle intending to turn left within an intersection. It doesn't say turning left in any intersection. It doesn't say completing a left-hand turn. It says intending to turn left. And I think that's in...
It says shall yield the right-of-way. If you don't enter the lane, how do you fail to yield the right-of-way?
Because she breaches her duty to our client, Mr. Spencer, when she takes a left under these circumstances.
And hits that first lane that is the easterlymost lane in this particular situation. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
So here we have three lanes going south. Your client was in the westerlymost lane, the curb lane. Under this record, the defendant was in the easterlymost, or perhaps the second easterlymost lane. And you're saying that once she got there, she had to yield right away into that curb lane.
I'm saying that she should have started to turn left when she knew that all three lanes were clear from traffic. She didn't do that, and that ended up, therefore, she breached her duty, which ended up approximately causing our client's injuries.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.